Potting's winning.
Ing is winning.
Iowa Code, Chapter 71, Subsection 2. No persons unlawfully appointed in violation of the state nepotism law or employed pursuant to that law shall be paid or receive any compensation from the public money, and such appointment shall be null and void, and any person or persons so paying the same or any part thereof together with their surety shall be liable for any or all money so paid. Someone tell Brian Ferentz I want my money back.
What's really amazing about that is they have not even kept up the facade of Brian reporting to Gary.
Gary's comments after the game are just a complete abdication of any sort of, as you called it very correctly, a facade that he is Brian Ferentz's boss.
Right.
It's literally Kirk will make his decision. I support Kirk's decision on his employment. When the one thing you can't have under university policy is a relative deciding on your employment status. It's the one thing they say you can't have. That's the one verboten part of it.
The good news to me is that this sure looks like a reason for the regents and or president to involve themselves in this situation. Whereas if it weren't for that, I don't think that they would have standing yet. But this is pretty clear. And they put up the facade to make it happen. And now, again, none of the parties even care about that anymore. It's blatant.
I mean, I guess I question whether or not the regents or the presidents care either, because it's not like it hasn't been. It's not like up until the season they were acting as if we weren't getting reports every year that Gary was having a meeting with Brian at the end of every year to talk about his performance.
Don't get me wrong. It would be extremely hypocritical of them to be like, wait, what?
I don't think hypocrisy has ever been a problem for these guys.
Exactly. That was my follow-up point.
I had multiple people contact me after the game. Is there something we can do legally? And
always a great sign.
And a thought just kind of floated through my head that I don't think I'm going to have field passes for this weekend, but I could. And how baller would it be to just serve Brian Ferentz with a lawsuit during the game? I would absolutely be ushered out like I was when I was wearing my Stancy as the Manzi shirt. Thank you so much, Mexicant. But it would be totally worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And look. We know that they are pretty much immune to any sort of shame, any sort of embarrassment at this point. But everyone would notice at that point.
Everyone would notice. That would pretty much bring it all to a head. I gotta say, it was deeply, deeply satisfying to read I'm gonna butcher the poor man's name. Les Marias's piece on Saturday afternoon. Somebody who does not have to worry about an ongoing press credential with the University of Iowa, not have to worry about the sort of indignance. And I had multiple people contact me after the game going, why is your beat not destroying these guys for this? And I'm like, they really can't.
Yeah. Their job would be on the line.
Yes. They would actually potentially get fired.
I mean,
we've told the story here before. They tried to get us fired. We didn't even have a press pass. They tried to get us fired from BHGP at one point. Mm-hmm. like this is what they do. And they wield that authority almost as much as they don't wield authority over their own employees.
Let me ask you something. Before we move on from this, did you watch that clip of Ferentz in the post-game presser?
Yeah, yeah.
So at the very end, for those who didn't, it's Doug Lesmeriasis's question time. And he makes a comment which was not friendly, but it was fair. He said, people have seen that your offense is ranked near the bottom in basically every category. And Ferentz fell back on that little prickish attitude of his, which he only cops. Like, I get that away from the field, he's a nice guy. But whenever somebody starts questioning him at these pressers, he goes into full-on stubborn. And so he makes a snide little comment like, yeah, I guess I've heard that. Or I guess some people told me that they've seen that. And Doug, because he doesn't have to worry about the Iowa SID, snaps back, yeah, everybody's seen it. Like,
yeah,
the fact that he had that freedom to be like, no, Kirk, we're not playing your stupid little game.
Right, right. We're not falling victim to the old Kirk's going to make a snide comment or a quip or tell you a story about 1978 and fall back on it. Like, It laid bare all the bullshit just by virtue of the fact that there was somebody there who didn't have to abide by it.
Yeah, it was an intimidation tactic against the wrong dude.
Yeah. I knew something was coming because I do follow Les Mariah's on Twitter. And he tweeted out about 45 minutes after the game. And I'm going to paraphrase, but not much. The tweet was basically, well, I tried. I talked to Kirk Ferentz. I talked to Gary Barta. I got to go right now. And I was like, ooh, this is going to be good. The Barta part is like mind blowing. That essentially he just continues to just defer repeatedly over and over again when asked the pointed questions that nobody ever really seems to be able to ask him. All he's able to do is basically go like, I defer to Kirk on everything.
Yeah.
Not a real surprise, but still it's refreshing to hear the truth for once instead of like some, middle management gobbledygook.
And really, like, when was the last time that some team goes into Columbus, or you can choose Ann Arbor, you can choose Tuscaloosa, you can like whatever. But when was the last time you saw a college football team walk into some top five program, get blitzed off the field, and then one of the beat writers afterwards is like, hey, you know what? Fuck that coach. Like, that was
ordinary. Yes. Usually it's like, hey, thanks for playing, guys, but we're just gonna move on to next week. This was very much like, no. What I saw out there was an abomination, and I'm going to make an example of everybody involved. And again,
I'm doing this for your fans' benefit because you're not going to do anything.
It was extremely sad.
Whoa, yeah.
Our good friend Jason Priestess texted me and was like, I don't know if you saw Les Mariah's column yet. And I said, I go, I've seen it. I've sent it to everybody I know. I might get it printed and put up as wallpaper in my den. Yeah.
I had people that like don't even follow college football sending it to me.
Yes.
That's not an exaggeration.
Right. What the hell's going on there? So Iowa loses 54-10 at Ohio State. It was exactly, well, I will say this. It was the most defensive 54 points that I think probably ever given up. They really played pretty well on defense for as long as they possibly could. They just had no support on the offensive side of the ball. And eventually you run out of steam. And I was not listening to Gary and Ed this week, although I kind of wish I had, because one of my coworkers was driving back from his son's JUCO game and informed me he was listening to Gary and Ed, and he's not even an Iowa fan. And he said that he was surprised at how frank Ed and Gary were about the situation. This was like early second half. And mm-hmm. his Dolphin was essentially saying, look, the defense is spent. They've got no chance out there anymore. They've put up a hell of a fight, but this is the dam's going to break here real soon. And sure enough, it did. Yeah. I mean, you can't turn the ball over that many times. You can't, you know, essentially just three and out and punt over and over again. Like,
punt would have been better.
Right. I mean, it was a travesty. And like, I don't know how you don't have a locker room mutiny at this point, not against the other players necessarily, but how the defensive players aren't mutinying against the head coach and the offensive coordinator when every game is just, please, with the 11 to 16 of you who are playing, save us from ourselves.
Yeah. The defense gave up one touchdown in Ohio State's first 10 drives.
Yeah.
First 10 times Ohio State had the ball, they scored one touchdown. They also scored a bunch of field goals because they kept getting the ball in Iowa territory.
With extraordinarily good field position for Ohio State.
Extraordinarily. And this is a team that came into that game scoring touchdowns, not points, touchdowns on over 90% of their red zone appearances.
Right.
Like,
God,
what Iowa did was borderline miraculous, and they gave up 54 points.
Yeah.
And that's squarely on the offense.
A merely good defense would have easily given up 80 in that game. Oh, I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. They would have
given up con gusto, too.
Yes. And I guess that's the point, right?
Yeah. The whole
system is broken. We didn't get great special teams. They didn't have much of a chance, frankly. I mean,
no.
When you turn the ball over that much, how much can you really get on special teams as far as field position goes? But the premise of the entire program has now been officially and completely laid bare.
Yeah.
The idea of complimentary football, which is please don't make Kirk and Brian do anything other than collect their paychecks, is just like that can't continue on, right?
No. Like, we know now that complimentary football is code for let's see if 14 points can win this game.
Yes. That's very much accurate. Yeah.
That's all it is.
And
now they're lucky to get to double digits on offense. The defense has scored 30% of the team's touchdowns. That's unfathomable.
It's unbelievable. This late in the season, it's unbelievable. They're the only entity to score a touchdown in, I think, well, at least this game. Nobody scored a touchdown against South Dakota State or South Dakota.
Nobody scored in the Illinois game.
Nobody scored in the Illinois game. Yeah. I mean.
So how many quarters is that? Who was the team before Illinois?
Before Illinois, it was I don't know, it was somebody else that we probably lost to.
It was Michigan. Okay,
Michigan.
So at the very so
they scored some points at the end.
Scored in the fourth quarter, so it's only an 8-quarter drought for touchdowns for the offense. That's all. That's single digits. They're fine.
Iowa changes quarterbacks at halftime. Finally, many people, I think, potentially astutely commented that it was essentially done in a manner that meant that Padilla had no chance of success.
It was so deeply cynical. That's the word that I keep coming back to. So cynical. Like, there was nothing Padilla could do at that point.
No. It goes back to, I mean, after 6 weeks of us telling you that there's no better option out there, let's show you your other option in the worst possible circumstance and then prove to you that there's no better option as a result of that. Right. Yeah. I mean, and I don't think that the people that were saying that were necessarily wrong, because I'm guessing that they're going to come out against Northwestern next Saturday with Spencer Peters under center.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
And
Mike Sicala has said basically the same thing. I know that they put on the depth chart that little or.
That or, yeah.
But he said that the coaches think that there's a pretty wide gap between one and two. And I bet I bet there's something to it. But again, I don't give that much of a damn about what happens in practice at this point. I really don't.
I don't either. The one thing I keep coming back to on that front, though, is we did see a lot of Padilla last year. And as somebody who attended the Nebraska game, I can tell you the bad Padilla is pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
But how bad
can Carson May be at this point?
Or Joe Labas.
Sure.
Whoever you might like at this point, it's all hands on deck. And really,
yeah,
this goes back to, and I'm going to fall into the same trap that Kirk always falls in. We're talking about other seasons, but I went back and looked this morning at 2012 because this feels like that kind of offensive futility.
Mm-hmm.
James Vandenberg took every snap under center that year.
Oh, I remember.
They did. Oh, yeah. They refused to put anybody else out there. They were going to ride that train till it went kaput, and it went kaput very, very early in the year. But there is no, like, we're going to get some snaps for the future.
No,
in this staff,
it was pure spite, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm fully expecting Peters comes back out. I'm fully expecting it to be an absolutely horrendous environment in Kinnick on Saturday.
It's going to be more toxic than like a Real Housewives season.
It's going to be
so bad.
And I'll be there.
I genuinely feel sorry for Petrus at this point.
I do too, because I'm sure he's a good kid. I've never met him personally, but he seems like he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Everybody, the one thing that you have here that you don't normally have in an Iowa quarterback controversy is the team seems universally not necessarily with him, it's not like Beathard and Rudock, where the word was like everybody likes Beathard. Rudock kind of hangs by himself. There's a potential leadership issue in that, and that Rudock doesn't necessarily have the ear of the guys. Like, none of that's out there on this, right? Everybody seems to be in Spencer's, or on his good side, and vice versa. Yeah. I think everybody wants him to be successful, including all the fans, if it's possible. It's just that at this point, I'm not sure that that's possible.
Yeah.
and then there's the question of what happens after that, because there still is an absolute open question as to whether anything happens with this coaching staff at the end of the year.
Which is what they've been kicking that can toward the entire season to begin with.
Yeah.
And so now I start to wonder, like, is the reason that Brian Ferentz got that QB job because nobody else wanted it? That Kirk wasn't, that he looked out over the landscape and saw nobody else that was going to run his offense the way he wants it? Because nobody else would sign up for something like this.
I mean, that might be the case. Oh, I got to think that, I mean, they found a way to bring in that analyst.
Bud Meyer? Yeah.
Yeah. I got to think that if they were like, we'll bump your pay to make you the QB coach. I mean, given he was a group of five, offensive coordinator last year, I got to think that he would be like, yeah, sure, I'll sign on for that for a year to see if I can make this work. Right. Now is that guy what Kirk wants? I don't know. Right. And is that any benefit or like, I have no idea. I'm racking my brain for how Iowa can fix this in a way that would allow Brian to move on and Kirk to continue to do what he wants to do in a more updated fashion. And I struggle to find anything that's going to make that work, because I don't think there's anybody on the planet who can talk sense into him and be like, you need to modernize this. You don't need to throw it out. There's plenty of good offenses that work off of the same scheme that you're running, but you've got to modernize it. You've got to simplify the concepts. You've got to be more aggressive in the way you're handling it. You got to basically do the Kyle Shanahan thing. Right. And you're not going to get anybody who's on the NFL career path to come in and take that job. And you're not, if you did, you would probably not have anybody who has enough of a sway over Kirk to make him do the things he has to do.
Yeah. And I think that the simplification part of it plays a bigger role. And this is me speculating, but I strongly think that, because Brian's not a dumb guy, I think Brian is putting too much on basically everybody in this offense because he wants to run an offense that showcases how smart he is. And I don't think that he's got the personnel for it, not even close. And rather than say, well, okay, let's focus on the things that we can do, it's always, no, the offense is sound. It's the execution.
Right.
Well, it's the players. Right. It's like putting a Dodge Neon in the Indianapolis 500. Like, you can do good things with a Dodge Neon. You can deliver pizzas. You can, you know, make it from Des Moines to Iowa City, no problem. Don't ask it to do that. Don't, you know what I mean?
Well, the entire explanation is kind of an absurdist comedy. Like, it's like reading Catch-22, right? Mm-hmm. The scheme is sound. Okay, well, then what's the problem? Well, it's the execution. All right, so then are the players not good enough? No, the players are great. Recruiting's never been better. Okay, so yeah. then
we like what we see in practice.
Right. So then why can't we
hear that a lot?
Oh yeah. And you know, you look at the stars of the guys that are coming in, and sure enough, this is the best recruiting period in years for Iowa football. Okay, so the players are good enough. So if it's not scheme and it's not the player personnel, then why is it that the players are struggling to run your offense? Well, it's execution. Okay, well, then that comes down to if the players are right and the scheme is right and the execution, that comes down to coaching the skills to the players, right? Well, no, the coaches are great.
Yeah.
Well, then what's the problem? Why are you last in everything at that point?
Right.
Why are we still sitting here fighting the same fight we've been fighting for the last 10 years in this same offense and getting the same answers every time when it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse every year?
And we also have sort of a test case, right? Because Charlie Jones, by all accounts, was not going to win a starting job as a receiver.
Which is comical. Utterly comical.
But you look at Bruce, you look at Keegan Johnson, and obviously they've been high on Deontay Bimes, and he's only just now healthy. Fine. But he goes to Purdue, and he is single-handedly outperforming Iowa's entire passing offense. Now, unless Purdue has Superman steroids, like that Captain America stuff, which if they were, you know, if they did, they'd be better than this. But like, clearly, in the course of one offseason, it's not as if Charlie Jones, Chuck Sizzle, or whatever they call him, it's not as if he leveled up 15 times and became the superstar receiver. Iowa had that talent. He was going to be the fourth best receiver on that team in terms of pure talent.
And he's the number one receiver in the conference.
Yes.
As a result, yes.
Yeah, because Purdue knows how to run an offense that gets people open. And he shouldn't be difficult.
And he's the number one receiver in an offense that's being quarterbacked by Aiden O'Connell. It's not like he has Tom Brady under center. Right. Like
Aiden Manning over here.
I mean, they call him AOC. The actual AOC might be a better quarterback. But and yet he's got Jones playing at a level far beyond anything that Iowa could have ever dreamed of because Iowa is still running this thing.
Sam LaPorta is going to the NFL without a doubt. Sam LaPorta has scored 4 touchdowns in his lifetime and none of them this season.
Well,
that is criminal. I
mean, if we want to be historical about it, arguably the best tight end in the whole damn NFL is an Iowa grad who barely registered as a player here.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, okay. Well, Kittle will tell you that some of that was on him.
Yes, I understand.
That he didn't take it seriously for a while. But when he was healthy, he got used a little bit.
Yeah.
He was lucky to get drafted when he did, which was what, fifth round?
Fifth round, yeah.
Yeah. And he was kind of lucky for that because the stats didn't back it up. And I know 49ers fans were not particularly thrilled with the pick either. You put him in a 21st century offense.
It's just the modern version of what we're running.
Exactly.
That's all it is. It is literally it's stretch and then with some inside zone and some actual man running concepts, which again, we ran in 15 and we went freaking undefeated that year. Mm-hmm. And then we dumped it because who needs that? And then, and the passing game is literally built off of all the things that Kirk Ferentz likes. It's play action, roll out to the tight end, play action, roll out deep to the receiver. And then you run that, that route across everything the opposite way when they bite on the play action the other way. That it's really not that complicated. And it's the in vogue offense in the NFL, which is the only thing he ever really seems to care about anyway. So why are we still running the 1995 version of it when it's not that hard to just extrapolate it out to the actual current version?
Right.
It's just infuriating. Hey, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
No, before we move on, go ahead.
The fact that we're still in the situation where quarterbacks are expected to need 2 years to learn this.
Yes.
To learn it tells me that somebody just needs to take an axe to that playbook or an axe to whatever script they're following in practice, chop 2/3 off of it, and be like, all right, run this and run it well. We'll worry about the rest of the shit later.
I mean, all right, here, Joe Labas was here all last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Red shirt. So he's in his second year here. And if you ask the coaches, contrary to what everybody has seen of him in the limited time that we've seen, right? We've seen a spring game and some practice in the summer or the August camp. So it's not anything
we've seen the public stuff.
But what we've seen is at least he can take a snap from under center, which is more than what we ever really hear from the coaching staff, who makes it sound as if the mere concept of lining the team up is so complicated that you can't even consider bringing anybody in who's spent less than 2 years in the system.
That's correct.
That can't be your college offense. In a portal era, you cannot run an offense that takes you two and a half years to figure out.
No. And the fact that we see quarterbacks move teams and instantly become better. Michael Penix went to Washington and immediately became the best quarterback in the Pac-12.
Adrian Martinez is lighting it up at Kansas State.
Yes.
Because all they figured out, contrary to what Scott Frost ever figured out, he's not a pocket passer. Right? They're literally just rolling him, finding him space, letting him run with it. He's not throwing a ton of passes like he was at Nebraska. They actually played to his strengths. They rebuilt the offense, right? They're not running the old North Dakota State offense down there anymore. They've moved it around so that they can actually take advantage of this, you know, unique talent they have under center. What a concept.
Right. The, what do they say? A good coach matches his players to the system. A great coach matches his system to the players.
Yeah.
Where is any of that here?
Well,
if you want to prove how smart of a coach you are, play to your guys' strengths.
Right.
And I know they have them.
It's as if they're watching a different game. That's the part that just gets so frustrating is you listen to, you know, you watch it with your own eyes and they basically tell you don't trust that.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing is not what you think it is. It's actually far, far more complicated than what you think it is. And it takes a lot of time for us to figure this out. And it doesn't matter that we have a third year starter under center, who's arguably the worst quarterback in not just the Big Ten, but all of Power Five football. That's not actually who he is though. Like he's actually good.
He's been
what you're seeing is
great.
Good.
he's practicing out of his mind.
I mean, he has to be turning water into wine in practice, right? Like if there's like a turned over Gatorade container, he walks across it. Like it's the only way this makes any sense at all. And yet there's no consequence to it, which I guess brings us to the more fundamental issue, which I just listened to.
Let's talk about it. Yeah.
I just listened to Stephen Godfrey talk about Jimbo Fisher, right? If somebody wanted to get Jimbo Fisher to change his offense, or else what? You're going to pay me $85 million to go away.
Yeah. $85 million of leverage.
There's nobody in the building who can tell Kirk Ferentz to change? They have zero leverage.
Right. So I teased this a little bit when we were chatting earlier today.
Yeah.
The historical comparison I've seen the most this year with Kirk has been Joe Paterno, right? And how Joe Pa was basically on the brink until he modernized his offense. Incidentally, by way of his son, but
the infamous spread HD. But remember, though, it wasn't necessarily his son. It was he brought in Galen Hall to run it, and then like had his son working as like Galen Hall's shoeshine boy co-coordinator during it. But
it worked, and it wasn't until he was overseeing some absolute horrors and at best didn't care that things really turned sideways. So I don't think, because I don't think that there's a absolute monster lurking in Iowa City. I don't. Certainly not under Kirk's nose. I don't think that's the corollary here.
No.
So I'm not thinking about Joseph Vincent Paterno. I'm thinking about Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
All right.
You see it, don't you?
I'm in on this now. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yep. He sticks to a system. Does he have some mild to moderately, let's say, before I get in trouble for using a certain word, outdated views on who should be in what role? Oh, yeah. Does it cause problems for recruiting? Yes. Does he think that his son needs to take over this business? Oh, yes. And
it's literally the CM Punk pipe bomb.
I'm telling you. I'm complete with the bullying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of that, we do things a very certain way, and you look a very certain way here. It's my way or the highway. Like Mr. That's Football, Mr. Next Man In, all of a sudden can't handle it when it's turned around on him. And that's good news is, if there's any good news, it's that Kirk isn't the owner of this program. Ultimately, and again, do we think that the presidents and regents the president and the regents are really going to, lift a finger on this? I don't know. But with Vince McMahon, as soon as he really started to mess with the money, that was it. But only then. Only then. So. Well,
and I guess the question is, I mean,
say it.
The problem that Vince ran into was it's not Paterno, but it was Paterno-ish, right? We're not going to have that from Kirk. He's not that guy. But your point on the money is accurate. The question is, how bad does the money have to get in order for it to be there? And in a year where you sold out every game, like it's got to be a pretty significant turnaround in the what the fan base wants. And even so, you're not really looking at, I mean, it's going to be embarrassing if the stadium's half full, don't get me wrong, but they can live with embarrassment. As we talked about, they really don't have any shame. Like the money's guaranteed. The money's TV money that's not going anywhere because it's conference wide, right?
Right.
They can not show Iowa football. It wouldn't matter to anybody at Iowa because they'd still get their share.
Yeah.
So how do you get to the point where they're actually messing with the money? I mean, the only money that really matters in this circumstance is boosters. Mm-hmm. Who Kirk always has a very good relationship with, and who probably could be the ones to actually make something change here if they wanted to.
Right.
And ticket money. But again, I don't think ticket money rises to the level anymore that's really that big of a consideration.
No, not anymore. But it is going to be a factor. I don't think it's going to be a very big one. But ultimately, it really has to come down to, are you a net benefit to our bottom line? Which right now, Kirk still is. And I think that in 12 months, he still will be too. So that was like, it's not like Vince got nicked at the first time, like he embarrassed the company.
Yeah.
because that was long since gone. And so that's sort of part two of this comparison, right? Like, and Vince was ultimately like, what, 15 years older than Kirk is now by the time that WWE had enough of him? I'm not saying Kirk's got 15 more years in Iowa City. I'm saying that just because this comparison is apt doesn't mean that change is on the horizon, because I'm still not at all optimistic about that.
No.
But that is the corollary that I see more than Joe Pa.
I appreciate and largely agree with that. I don't see where the pressure comes on the money side to make anything change. And I don't see where a man as stubborn as him is going to voluntarily shift something that he really doesn't want to shift. I mean, you got to remember.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Chris Doyle was his guy for 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Doyle was his guy through Rhabdo, was his guy through obviously seeing all the things that came up, right? I mean, the whole...
He was his award-winning Rhabdo coach.
Yes.
Award-winning.
Oh,
even awarded that?
Never again. Since? No. I made the joke that they were going to give Brian the, like, no upside plaque in February, and you'll never see it before or since. Like, that they're going to make up a new award to give him, because that's what they do despite everybody, right? Everybody wanted Doyle's head. Kirk gives him an award. He threw Doyle under the bus justifiably, but he chucked Doyle out when he could no longer maintain control with Doyle there, right?
Yeah.
But there was another guy who was being implicated in all of that at a somewhat smaller level, and he's still the offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I mean, they
put a note in his personnel file.
Right. And then withheld the personnel file from production. Yeah. So, like, he's going to be resistant to making any change with Brian. Could it be a co-coordinator? Sure. Maybe, but I don't see him kicking Brian
out. That's a capitulation in their eyes, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think they want to do that at all.
I don't think they do either. But this is just, I mean, like, he's beholden to basically two things that are now completely in conflict. He's beholden to keeping his son in as offensive coordinator, and he's beholden to running a 1997 Denver Broncos offense.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things cannot coexist anymore, except for the fact that they can, because he's going to be like, or else what?
Yeah.
And that's where it keeps coming. Like, it's like, there's no leverage to make him make a decision on the two. He could just keep it all going forever.
Yeah, he's basically saying, I dare you to stop me from embarrassing you some more.
Yes. It's an amazing situation. It's actually, it would be hilarious if it wasn't our program.
Right. I would love this if I were, say, writing about Illinois. I love it.
I just heard a whole conversation about whether or not Texas A&M would find $85 million to get rid of Jimbo Fisher. And it's all going to depend on, among other things, the war in Ukraine keeping oil prices up, because then they could, right? They're playing at a different level than what we've got here. There's no money. There's no way that $40 million is coming out to get rid of Kirk Ferentz. It's just not. And not even to a point where there won't even be enough to put a dent in it. To say nothing of the fact that in order to get the money in place, you'd have to have the AD go out and try to find the money. And the AD is wholly beholden to the head coach.
Now, wait a second. Are you telling me that Case IH didn't pay eight figures to sponsor the Red Zone?
Well, they're getting a terrible return on their investment this year.
Gary, I got to tell you, we haven't heard our name in weeks.
Yes. Oh, God. Hey, let me ask you this.
Go on.
I was walking by the office of one of the guys I work with today. He was listening to Christmas music. When's the earliest time that you could possibly listen to Christmas music?
Oh, I mean.
Are you one of these people that listen to Christmas music all year long? Like, is Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You in your playlist in like mid-May?
Very funny if it were. But no, I feel like the unofficial start of that, and even Mariah Carey herself has acknowledged it, that as soon as the clock ticks to midnight after Thanksgiving, that's the start of Christmas music.
Okay. That's kind of how I feel about it. And I even feel like that's a little early, but I can understand that. Before Halloween.
Are you agree with Mariah?
Before Halloween, like, I can't. No, what are you, crazy?
That's deranged.
It's deranged, right?
I get that.
It's a sociopath.
I'll point this out. Our good friend Jake Kokorowski posted a picture of him putting up Christmas lights this past weekend.
Oh, my God.
And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? And he said, I didn't say anything about turning them on. I'm doing it now because it's 70 degrees and I don't want to be up here on this ladder shivering. And I was like, oh, okay.
I've considered that before. Yeah.
Was not listening to Christmas music. Guarantee you.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. He's also kind of a sociopath.
Well, no argument there, but sooner that he was listening to Taylor Swift than Christmas music.
Yeah, probably. All right. So Northwestern this week, opening over under 31.5, the lowest over under in the history of college football over unders.
How far back does that go? Because I feel like in the 1970s, like basically every game was 17-7. So there has to be some, like, those numbers had to start in the 80s, right?
I mean, I would assume so. I mean, I don't think that there was even anything close to widespread sports gambling until, probably the mid-80s would be my guess. I mean, I'm sure there were probably numbers in Vegas, but they certainly weren't being published online in 1978.
Yeah. So regardless, for as long as they've been keeping numbers, this is the lowest.
Yes.
This is the abyss.
Pat Fitzgerald told reporters today that he petitioned the Big Ten to start the game at 6 a.m. Which I got to admit, at least a guy that appears to have no sense of humor whatsoever to make a joke that good. I mad props to the Potato Man on that one. That's
Brady
fantastic.
Anderson 50 home run season just out of nowhere.
I mean,
that's good.
Is there anything? I talked to my friend who is at Northwestern. We're meaning to go to the game this weekend, and we were talking about whether we wanted to splurge for like good tickets, and I mentioned I'm really only there for the dark comedy of the entire thing, so I can sit wherever, and he was in agreement. It has the capability of being just a completely unwatchable game. Not that most of the other ones Iowa's played this year haven't been, but this could be an absolute nadir for offensive football as we know it.
Oh, I saw the over-under, and I still think the under is, like, not a bad move. What do they say? Four out of the last five games that Iowa Northwestern have played have come in under that 31.5?
I'm sure. I've been at most of them. All right.
That is insanity.
So 31.5 is your over under. November 6th, 2021, Iowa 17, Northwestern 12. That's 29.
Okay. That's
October 31, 2020, Northwestern 21, Iowa 20. So that's an over.
Ooh, by a lot.
Yeah, they destroyed that one.
That's 41 whole points.
October 26, 19. Iowa 20, Northwestern 0.
That's under.
November 10, 2018. Under. Northwestern 14, Iowa 10.
Also under. 3-1.
October 21st, 2017. Northwestern 17, Iowa 10.
That's four out of the last five, Pat.
That's four of the last five. And it took literally a global pandemic to get them to go over the one time that they did.
COVID-19, more like COVID
41.
Got him.
Now 16, 15, 14, 12, 11, 10 all went over. So
those days are gone.
Those days are long gone. Those were the salad days of Greg Davis. God, what has happened here? So, are you going to watch this game?
I mean, I have to.
And that's the point, right? This is the point. It's like we're hostages.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, one, because we are obligated for the sake of this website. Two, deeply morbid curiosity. Because there is a non-zero potential for this to be the worst offensive game in Big Ten history, or at the very least, post-expansion Big Ten history.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, this has,
for as long as there's been more than 10 teams.
I'm not even joking. This has the Frank Beamer Virginia Tech Wake Forest 0-0 graphic written all over it.
Oh, for sure. And Northwestern's defense sucks.
Yeah. I mean, it's the one potential saving grace is that they're so bad at defense that we might actually score one touchdown. And that might be enough. Like a 7-0 final is absolutely not out of the question. In fact, the only thing that might stand in the way of that is that their offense is so bad that we're probably bound to get at least a short field at some point. We have a decent kicker.
10-7. Is that out of the range of plausibility? Absolutely not.
No. I think that's a completely plausible score. Yeah. I think it's far more likely than something like 28-14.
I think
a shootout breaking out at 28-14 is probably not likely.
Here is what I think the real, and I don't know if they even take odds on this, but how many yards combined do you think both offenses are going to account for on Saturday? Combined.
Oh.
Would you take 400?
I was going to say 400. I'm probably taking... I think I take over, but I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it. There's got to be a prop on this, right? An over under total yards is an excellent prop, and that really should happen. I think over because I just Northwestern's defense is so bad that I got to think Iowa's gonna be able to do a little bit. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I don't expect Northwestern to do anything at all in this game.
That's the thing. I'd be surprised if Northwestern gets over 160 yards.
Right. I mean, if they start 125, now you got to have Iowa come up with 275, and they're not going to do that. What do you think this is, 2004?
Kirk would rather have an aneurysm than Coach Drew Tate again.
I got to go. I hate going back to what we already talked about, but I got to say, the most satisfying part of that entire Les Mariasis post was the dismissal of Kirk talking about the 2000 Penn State game.
He was really digging deep on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's coming up with we got nothing, right? I mean, 2000 Penn State. Yeah, that was the proof of concept for the whole thing to a certain extent, but it still was not. I mean, that team went 3-8.
Yeah.
If that's where you're digging as an example, it's going to be worse than we thought.
Right. And that was one that was on the doorstep of Penn State's bad, bad lull. Again, the lull that would have cost anybody but Joe Pa their job.
Are you saying lull like LOL?
Don't you dare. Don't you dare. It's a really terrible team at that point. They had nothing on talent wise on offense. Who was the quarterback? Was that Kyle McCann still?
Broadway
Kyle
in 2000.
Yeah.
By the time they hit Penn State, I think they had benched Butcher and gone to McCann.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
I hope Kyle McCann's doing well, by the way.
I think he's a lawyer.
You don't suppose we could use him? Is he a nepotism lawyer by any chance?
I don't know anybody who exclusively practices in the field of nepotism, to be honest with you. Although I've strongly considered it at this point.
He's not nep law.
I only practice in the field of nepotism law. A very, very particular practice within the labor and employment group at my firm. But it's going to be a long slog to the end of the season. This could well be the last time that Iowa wins a game. And
it's more plausible than not, I would say.
Yeah. At this point. No, I think it's highly likely that maybe one more, right? Nebraska at home still has the capability of being a win just because Nebraska never plays well at the end of November. They've got their own interim coach. If things go south for them the next couple of weeks, they could certainly throw it in. But that's going to make, it's going to be a black Friday. if a sad Nebraska and a absolutely over it Iowa get together on leftover day, like, you might as well just go ahead and eat all the leftover turkey and take a nap.
Like, I think the worst case scenario, the worst case plausible scenario for Iowa, which is win the Northwestern game and then lose out until Nebraska. Like, if that happens, the team that Iowa's going to bring in to that game is going to make the Nebraska locker room look like an episode of the Teletubbies. Like, I think the vibes in Lincoln are going to be so much better than the ones here, which is insane. It should never happen.
Hey, by the way, I bet Dallas Clark will be there this weekend.
Just saying, right. Hey to the best fans in America.
Now I'm just cracking wise for no good reason. All right. I think that'll do it for this week. Nothing but sunshine and lollipops from us. Tune in Saturday. I promise you, it's going to be something you're never going to see again in your life. It's going to be a level of futility that I think really will just transcend all of humanity. It might bring, you know, the Armenians and the Azerbaijanis together in peace and harmony. It's going to be that of a much of a holistic experience watching these two.
Caucasus Mountains.
Oh yeah, baby.
I think we're going to replace the Tiger Hawk with the frowning Yukon Husky. That's where we're going with this.
That's where we're going. Yep. All right. Talk to you next week. Go Hawks.
Bye.